Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode number 11, and we're going to talk with Brian Beaver Vino. Brian, or Beaver as his nickname is from Canada, and he's got some great stories of how he started out in the business, and I think they're worth listening to because he talks about Craigslist and doing deals in parking lots for snakes and chainsaws and some pretty crazy stuff. But he did learn something from that. That's a skill that's transferable, and I think that's a big deal. I think the other thing that I got was I was able to find out why Beaver asks so many questions. So let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And today I'm really excited to be talking with Brian Beaver, as we would know him, Vino. And Beaver is from Canada, no pun intended there. But what I really appreciate about Beaver is his studying this, what I would call a craft. He is a student. He is forever asking questions, and he's not asking common questions like, hey, I can buy Legos for $1 and they're selling for $49 and they have 100,000 of them. Should I buy them? He's asking really pertinent questions that most people are thinking and are just afraid to ask. I don't get the vibe that Beaver's afraid of asking anything. So I'm really excited to find out what his goals are and what's going on in the far, far north. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure to be on the podcast.
You know, you are in so many groups. You are forever noticeable, and yet you're in Canada. You know, and I think that is one of the things that is going to make it a much more interesting for people, because, you know, we all have challenges here. You know, we run into other sellers, we have different things, but you got a border, and you're sending most of your inventory to the U.S., correct?
Yes, I am. It's probably like 90% of my sales happen in the U.S., only 10% in Canada.
And yet, you know, they're always trying to push us to go sell in Canada, and we can talk about that in a few minutes. But, you know, your background, you have an IT background, and you have some experience selling on eBay, if I'm correct, right?
Yep. So I was a long time ago, probably 8 years ago, I was sitting at my day job, and I started thinking about different, you know, I started thinking about different things I could sell, and I kind of worked it up as video games and cell phones, and went through a bunch of different things and selling them first on local like Craigslist, and then going there from there to eBay.
Is Craigslist a big thing in Canada, or is there another option?
Well, actually, every time I say Craigslist, I'm not actually – most people don't sell on Craigslist. They sell on something called Kijiji, which is it's exactly the same as Craigslist, you know, same – has cities and everything based like that. But it's made by eBay, and it's you know, pictures and text. You know, it's kind of a richer experience than Craigslist, and it just, for some reason, it has like the network effect where everybody's using it, so it's the go-to platform. Craigslist really hasn't picked up that much in Canada.
Do you get the same creepers? Like when I put something on Craigslist, everybody's from other countries, and they're going to send me money orders and pay me double what I want, and you know, it's all magic. Do you get those same people?
Oh, yes. I did that really hard for a year or a year and a half, you know, a year to 2 years. I did those marketplaces, you know, sometimes two deals a day, at least seven deals a week, where I was meeting up with people in parking lots and, you know, exchanging cell phones and video games. And so I got all kinds of crazy people wanting to trade me snakes and swords and chainsaws and just really strange stuff. And I don't know how I did it, because now when I try to sell something, I get, really overwhelmed with people. There's a certain mental energy that it draws from you dealing with that type of environment, but there was money there, and that's how I, for probably 2 years, I started with like $50, and I think I worked my way up to probably $5,000 just doing like, cash transactions in parking lots, meeting people and buying things from one person and then meeting another parking lot and selling it to another person. And so, yeah, I did that for quite some time.
That's interesting. I just can't imagine a combination of snakes, swords, and chainsaws in any possible sentence being a good thing in any way. I've bought off of Craigslist a bit, volume. You're always looking for volume. But I shy away from just because it's just too many crazy. Now, we have a thing here in the U.S. called OfferUp, and it's relatively new. I've only heard about it maybe in the last couple months. And we have some things on it and have had no activity. So I don't know. I think that's a community-driven. I think there's more active communities than ours. But what's kind of neat, it's tied to your Facebook. So it's a little less creepy, maybe.
Right.
But no activity. So, it's kind of neat, but nothing sells. So that's not really good. So, you started, you moved from the Kijiji, I don't know if I can even say that, to eBay. And you did eBay. But all that time, you were still working full-time, correct?
Right. Yep.
In that IT background, you were developing mobile apps. Now, were you a programmer? Were you a project leader? Were you what's that entail?
So I was actually quality assurance. So I did like software testing for all our mobile apps. So basically, somebody would. I guess this kind of ties into what I do on Facebook, right? So it's like somebody develops an application, they give it to me, and I kind of have to interrogate it and say, what does it do, and what's it going to do when I do this, and, find out all the parameters of what's the features of this software, and try to imagine any kind of situation that the programmer hasn't thought of, scenarios where I thought there could be flaws. So that was kind of my role, was to, go through and pick at the software and try to find any flaws that I could possibly figure out.
It's interesting. So two skill sets, right? So you negotiating face to face about chainsaws and snakes in parking lots, right? That's a definite skill that is transferable over to dealing with store managers and wholesale opportunities and that. And so that's really interesting. And then the second, and now it makes sense while you ask so many questions, that's your background, right? You are testing to find the flaw. You're testing to find a way to make sure that flaw is fixable, addressable, or you can get around it, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I'm just like a naturally curious person. So, when I'm sitting doing nothing, my brain's kind of constantly thinking, oh, what about this? And, approaching things from different angles. And then obviously, so now, I've built up kind of a base of people that I'm friends with on Facebook. So when I ask a question, a lot of people are responding. So it's good because I'm asking all these questions and hopefully they're good enough questions. But as I do, a lot of people are contributing and discussing. So if I was to ask a question and, only one person answered, I don't know that would be as interesting.
I agree. But I think, don't sell yourself short. You're giving as much information. You're giving a lot more than you're asking, because I see you out there answering a lot of questions. And a lot of your questions, I think some of them seem to be instructional, the way I read some of them. I'm thinking, he's asking a question because he wants an answer, but I think he's also trying to help us all figure something out. Is that a good read?
Yeah, I think so. You know, to kind of look at situations from other angles, and I can't think of an example of a question lately, but yeah, I think that's true. It's some of it is, you know, have you thought about it in this way, or it's kind of suggesting a little bit.
So, you know, I sit back and I think about the direction that you're going, right? Where do you see yourself going? Are you trying to create a business, a career, a job, a lifestyle business, or a lifestyle in general, right? You have a young, growing family, a very understanding wife, because I've seen the pictures of your basement, so she's clearly very understanding. But you're traveling an enormous amount. I mean, what are you trying to do? Where do you see that this going for you?
Yeah, lately I'm kind of – that's been on my mind a lot, is like, what am I doing? So – and I haven't quite figured that out yet. So, you know, in some ways I think – you know, it's getting to the point where I could kind of go bigger. You know, I could get like a warehouse and people, and, you know, I could have, you know, I was thinking the other day, you know, if I had employees and they could just spread around the city and go pick up things and, you know, source through like Craigslist style stuff and, you know, and yard sales and thrift shops and stores. You know, and have that all brought back and have, you know, someone there that, you know, does listing. You know, they're eBay, or, you know, they list things on eBay. They take pictures. They, you know, and so I think about that, and then I'm like, but do I want that kind of operation, right? Do I want to be the boss of, you know, five people and do all that, five actual, you know, non-virtual people. So I'm having a tough time trying to figure out, you know, what I want to do, if I want to go that route, or if I want to, you know, do as much as I possibly can myself and maybe one or two workers.
Has this become a job yet for you? Do you feel like that yet?
No, I don't. I don't
that's
really.
Good. And that's good. I mean, that's a big deal. I think that's half of it right there.
Yeah.
The day it starts to become a job, you know, you had a job.
Yeah.
You didn't want that job. You're looking for something different. Is it freedom as much as financial freedom, or, you know, is there enough? I mean, it doesn't. I mean, I never got the vibe that you want to live a lavish lifestyle. You want to be comfortable, but is it freedom or financial freedom, or are they mutually exclusive?
I don't know. I just, what I say is, I want to be able to do whatever I want, whenever I want. Like, you know, and how long I want to do it. But I don't know if I'm ever going to get there. But so, you know, if I want to travel somewhere, if I want to go somewhere this weekend, to, you know, to Florida or to wherever, and kind of do what I want to do, that's kind of what I'm attracted to, right? I don't really want a Lamborghini or something like that. I just want to have the kind of, I guess in a way it's the freedom.
So it's more of a lifestyle freedom. It's not really the financial freedom. It's that lifestyle. I did an interview with Chris Bond, and I think that's going to be breaking soon. And he truly has developed a lifestyle. I mean, his lifestyle is around his business fits into his lifestyle. It's just one segment of it. For example, he's taking his family. Well, I think you did the same thing, camping. And part of it is he's going to pay for the trip while he's doing it. And it's very thought out. It's very deliberate. But he pulls to the side, parks his vehicle, gets in with his family, and goes and become, you know, is that dad that just is there, you know, and just a great dad who's there. And I just think that that's so important. And I think a lot of people are chasing something, and I don't think they know what they want. I think they're chasing money, and that's definitely not the right thing to chase. They really need to chase whatever it is for you.
Yeah, it's true. Like we, you know, I noticed a pattern, I don't know, 5 years ago or more, where, you know, we were every place we lived was like slightly better. You know, we went from apartment to a nice apartment to a really nice apartment to a decent house. And, you know, we went through three or four different houses and kept, you know, going up and going up. And then we finally got to a house that was, you know, 30 total square footage, three levels, was like 3,600 feet. And at that point, we're just like, you know, they're kind of, we don't need this much. And then, you know, we made a decision to kind of start going to go back a little bit, right? So we went from that probably to like something close to half the size of that. So we're no longer, I think we're no longer in that, you know, must build a bigger empire sort of mentality.
That lifestyle creep, as I like to call it, right? You know, and I interviewed Matt Carlett. I don't know if you know Matt. And Matt and I spoke some time about, you know, how people not judge. I don't want to say it that way because that sounds so derogatory. But, you know, basically, oh, hey, Bieber, what do you do for a living? That's the first question we ask, you know, and that's wrong, you know, because that shouldn't be the thing that defines you, right? You know, I mean, hey, he's a great dad. He's a great brother. He's a great father, or he's a great, you know, son, you know, or he makes a difference doing this. I mean, that would be, I'd rather be known for that than what I do for a living.
Yep.
And so I think that lifestyle creep is something. Now, you were a Dave Ramsey follower for a while, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And so that really was something that I remember talking with you some time ago about how that really was part of your decision to go full time is because you prepared yourself, made tough choices, right? I think this lifestyle creep is a great example. You made tough choices for a long-term future.
Yeah, exactly. So I forget when it was, but it was probably 5 years ago when we started getting into Dave Ramsey, and who knows why a person from Nova Scotia, as far away as I am from Tennessee and from that sort of life, but how I picked up on Dave Ramsey, but because no one anywhere ever I've been around here has ever heard of him. But so for some reason it clicked with me, and I think sometimes like ideas, someone has an idea and it's just, you know, that makes sense to me, and I just kind of go with that idea. So his idea was, you know, basically that you shouldn't buy new cars. It was, you know, he kind of explained it out how you know used cars and the value and when the value drops off. So that kind of clicked with me, and you know, we kind of went through that. Spent 2 years paying off all our debts except the house, which isn't done yet, and then saving, you know, big emergency funds for rainy days, and that kind of helped going full time.
Does it help you? Because you're making some pretty big decisions now about purchasing, because you've really built a smart level. You have a pretty big fund to be able to buy. Would you attribute that to that Dave Ramsey, or just that lifestyle adjustment being what makes you more comfortable making these bigger purchases?
I think so. You know, I don't know if I've ever really worried so much about I talked to a few people that mentioned that they were worried about, you know, certain buys. I don't know if I've, you know, ever been that worried, just because everything has sort of been, you know, from the start, I never took out of household money. So the $30 I started everything with has just been reinvested all the time. So it's only in the last couple of years where I started taking out payments, you know, taking out salary. So, you know, if I buy something and it doesn't work out, you know, it's not, we're not going to miss a mortgage payment, or we're not going to, you know, go hungry or not be able to fill the gas tank. And, you know, I did make a mistake probably a year and a half ago with one of my largest buys. I bought 50 fire trucks, and it was $1,800. And I thought it was like such a good deal, you know, such a good opportunity. And it took me like 2 years to get out, you know, to finally sell them. So, you know, I probably just sold the last one a month ago. So it was, you know, really slow process selling them. And they were huge, and it cost so much money to ship. It was just, you know, a really, in hindsight, I would never done that, never done that deal, but it happened. And I don't know. I don't know if it, I can't even remember that time, but it must have soaked up a lot of my sourcing budget, and I probably, you know, sat around for 2 weeks not being able to buy anything.
I don't know if this is true for you, but I'm actually at the place now where I say no so much more than I say yes. I mean, I have an example today. I was at a place that is having a liquidation, and there's 95% of the stuff in the place I'm not interested in, not at all. And could you sell it? Maybe, and maybe, and, you know, long term, or build a bundle, or I don't want to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm interested. I think what we'll do is we'll take a break, because I think I want to come back and talk about, you're in Canada, and how that really affects your buying, your shipping, your processing system, because I'm really intrigued by that, okay? So let's take a break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back into the podcast, I did want to mention a couple things that I think are really worth listening to here and really paying attention to, because we talk a lot about importing goods into the U.S. Remember, 90% of Brian's sales happen in the United States, and we spend a lot of time talking about that, and specifically talking about shipping and the evolution that he's had to go through, but more importantly, he had to figure it out. He had to figure all this out on his own. He wasn't able to just go out and Google this stuff. And I just think that really is worth listening to. Maybe the way he was able to approach it and his lack of fear. The other thing I think that was really interesting is how he's had to take all that shipping stuff into his purchasing decisions and shipping times and how important all those things are. So I think there's some really good information here. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Beaver, as we like to call him, Brian Vino from Canada. And what really fascinates me about this whole situation is he's buying, for the most part, in Canada and sending 90% of it to the United States, and he's still able to make money at it. Even with shipping, and I mean, I picture you bringing it to the border in the back of a pickup truck. It has to be an old pickup truck, right? And you're bringing it to this guy, and this guy's at the other side of the border grabbing the boxes off the back of the truck and bringing them and dropping them off. Is that how it works?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay. I thought that was the way.
No. So, shipping has always been like the major challenge. So my biggest challenge to date was starting. And I guess maybe everybody says that, but for me it was, you know, I was in all these groups and I was saying, does anyone know how I can ship my items to Amazon? And nobody was answering because as far as I know, there was no other Canadians doing it or no other Canadians that would step forward and say they were doing it. So, you know, it really took me a long time to figure out how to do it, because Amazon had this rule to say, you know, we'll let you, you know, you can ship from international into our fulfillment center, but if we receive the goods and we have to pay duty or they try to charge us duty, we're shipping that back to you. You know, we're not going to receive it. And, you know, so I was thinking in my head, you know, if they do that, they'd probably just kick me off Amazon and never sell again. And I can't have anything arrive there, you know, that's owing duty. So the duty has to be charged back to me. So, you know, I couldn't figure out an answer on how I could make that work. And, you know, I was asking the questions and there's just nobody answering. And then, you know, one person on a forum had said, you know, if you send it through the Canada Post, which is our equivalent of United States Postal Service, and as long as it has a declared value of under $200, you won't have to pay any customs or duties.
Okay, so pause there a second. So you're buying boxes of Legos.
Right.
You're putting them in a box, and you're sending them via Canada Post Office to Amazon, not UPS, not to – you got to explain that.
Yep. So actually – so I would go to the post office here and ship it. So what happens is Canada Post delivers it to the border, hands it off to USPS, United States Postal Service, and USPS delivers it to Amazon.
Wow. And so you're able to – so it's not a declared shipment of more than $200, because clearly that doesn't make sense. It's a per box
right.
declaration.
Yep.
And so you just have to be very cognizant of how you're packing. So if you're selling – and is it declared retail value or is it declared purchase price?
So declared purchase price.
Okay. So you're just – you know, if you're buying $10 items, you're going to put 19 of them in that box, right? And then that's the way you're going to manage it that way.
Right. So okay. So that's what I did initially. I have since changed. So I kind of went through three steps. So my first step was – on my first shipment, I actually drove across the border and dropped it off in Maine. So I drove like 500 miles to Maine and dropped off my first box, because I was, you know, I wanted to try it. I wanted to figure out if it was going to work, but I didn't know how to get through all these, you know, get past the shipping issues, customs. So we just drove the first box. And then second one was, you know, Canada Post. Well, I did that for probably a year and a half. And then I moved from there to using UPS. So with UPS, we got set up with everything I need to do customs. And I, you know, every shipment, there's an extra process that probably takes about an hour, which is I have to go through every item, and I had to find the HS code, which is the like a customs code for each item, and then make up a commercial invoice to include for customs to inspect. So that's how we're doing it now, and then we can do multi-box shipments. And I can do shipments up to $2,500 of goods before I have to go through a really formal process.
Okay, and again, that's the purchase price of $2,500, the declared purchase price.
Yes.
So I guess you could almost call it a replacement cost. And so you create this invoice. Is that has Amazon offered you? You know, can you download your computer guy? Can you download anything, or are you literally having a pop it into Excel or something like that?
I do it from Excel. So what I do is I download my pack list, and then I separate it out into categories, say like toys, video games, electronics, you know, stuff like that. And then I go through and, you know, it's not so bad when it, because Toys, for example, has pretty much all one HS code. So then I have to say, well, you know, where was the country that it was made? Well, almost every toy is made in China. And then, you know, video games fall under one, but, you know, computers and if I get into kitchen stuff, you know, there's some different HS codes for different things. So it does take a little bit of time, probably an hour a shipment to go through and figure that all out.
Well, that's a barrier to entry, I guess, then. Kind of like what you said you started, is that trying to figure all that out, that's not an easy thing. It's hit or miss. So do you have to pay a surcharge in any way to send your stuff from Canada? Because you're sending it from Canada, generally speaking, from Canada to the U.S.?
Yeah, so I pay, like, my shipping costs are, like, a lot higher than most people. So, for instance, when I was doing it through Canada Post, one medium-sized Home Depot box, which is like 18 by 18 by 16, would cost me $50 to $60 to ship.
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa. So, I started getting talks to people, they were saying, you know, that's like $5 for us to ship or less.
Right.
But, yeah, that's $50 or $60, and it's still not that much better, you know. It's with UPS, the way I got it, you know, sometimes I'm close to a dollar a pound. So, but I'm, you know, sometimes you guys are at 50 cents a pound, so.
Well, we do inventory placement, so, and we shipped from about an hour from our house, and we generally spend around 22 to 25 cents a pound for that stuff.
Right.
But when I ship to California, it's a dollar and change a pound. And the bigger items, you know. So most of our stuff goes to that one place about 22 to 25 cents.
Right.
So it'd be still a 50-pound box would be $11 in that case. But if I'm shipping it to the West Coast, I'm paying a buck and change sometimes.
Yeah, and that's a dollar is my best-case scenario, right?
Okay.
And we try to get to that where we try to make the boxes, you know, as heavy as we can. And, you know, if it's – sometimes, you know, if it's big items, right, you can only fit like four in a box, and toys are not really that dense. You
right.
know, it's going to be, you know, it could be like $3 a pound. But
so you're building that into the price. Now, are you using any inventory processing places in the U.S. for you right now?
I do use one in California that receives. So if I do, I mostly use it for Amazon to Amazon flips.
Okay.
So where I'm buying off Amazon and selling on Amazon, I'll have it sent to the prep location. So right now, you know, with the Canadian dollar a little weaker, you know, it's making up for the extra shipping costs in a way.
Okay. All right. And so you really have to really be smarter about buying. I mean, and I don't think that that's untrue of anybody. I think, you know, one of the things you talked about is making a bad purchase. And I guess I heard, I think it was Matt Kelly who said this, maybe it was Harvey Specter. He said something to the effect, and it was just so brilliant, because he was like, I'm making sure that when I buy a particular item, even if the floor drops out, I'm back to whole, right? So no matter what, I really can't lose. I might go back and I might not make a dime, but I know if I leave my money sitting in the bank, I'm not going to make a dime. So at least this way, if there's – because really there's only upside in that potential, because if you like – again, like he said, if you leave it sitting in the bank, you're not going to make anything. And so as long as you buy it at that price, I think that's a real tip for people to think about. Buying is so critical, and especially putting those full costs. We do inventory placement. I think a large item is $3 to $5 is my cost for that inventory placement. So that, generally speaking, we stay away from large items unless we get it at an amazingly low price, right?
Right.
So you're really thoughtful about that in your situation.
Yeah, I think I have to be, you know, times where I've got burned is on hot toys. So, you know, my definition of that would be something where, you know, like the frozen stuff or, you know, something that, you know, you have like a maybe a week or 2 week window where you got to buy it and get it in there super fast, or you know that Amazon's going to restock and you know you're not going to be able to sell it for a while. So on those things, I know, you know, a lot of people do them, but I just, you know, I've been burned on them enough that I just stay away from them because, you know, my shipping time is increased. And, you know, things are retail is higher price retail here in Canada. So the same Lego set that you may pay $49, it might be $59 here or $64. So, you know, if I try to play the hot toy game, I got to buy. I'm more expensive. I'm slower. So it really doesn't work out, and I'd really try to avoid that. So that's one example of how I have to, you know, do it differently.
But I think that that's the smart move, right? I think that that's what sharpens your skills, right? I just saw a post by somebody talking about Target, and their point was, look, every Target across the country is going to liquidate their toys this time of year, right? It's just a matter of when. You might see a deal where it's 30% off. Well, guess what? The other places haven't gone to 30 yet. They're all sitting on that same inventory. They're right behind you. So you're thinking, oh, buy all this stuff. Well, guess what? That market's going to get flooded very, very soon. And having the ability, I guess, is, again, to walk away and say no, that's a real skill. You've been selling a couple of years. So is it just recently you've gotten that skill where you feel like that, I don't know if there's like a nerve somewhere where you get a little twitch and say, no, I can see that falling out. I can see that falling out. I'm going to walk past that.
I've always been pretty good at that. And the only reason I say that is because I have a friend that, you know, when we were doing cell phones, he was doing cell phones at the same time. And I just watched and kind of, I don't know what it was, but, you know, if I felt like if I got a weird, strange feeling that, you know, things weren't on the up and up or was a bad deal or something, I would just kind of like forget about that email and stop responding to it and, you know, just lose interest in it or whatever. And then, you know, if he would pick it up and then he would go buy it and it would turn out to be a bad deal. So, and I've seen so many, you know, quite a few examples of that where it was like, you know, somehow I managed to steer clear of all these bad deals. And I don't know, you know, I had like a sort of sense that, oh, maybe there's something going on there. And it's kind of, you know, a little bit cautious rather than, you know, a little bit greedy, you know, to jump into something without thinking.
I like that. It's a don't make fatal decisions, right? Don't make fatal choices, right? Make smart choices and take some risks, but not ones that can completely shut you out. So I think that's really smart too. You know, we talked about some of the challenges that you have, you know, dealing with the U.S. Now, in the Canadian market, they're forever trying to get us to sell in Canada. It's just a slower market due to population and distance and that kind of thing. Are you seeing any uptick in the business in Canada for yourself?
I see. Actually, Canada is, you know, it could work for you guys, and I'm not trying to discourage anyone from going there. I see, you know, in my mind, you guys are better positioned for to take advantage of the Canadian market because, you know, you have the lower cost, probably more fiercer competition in the U.S. on the pricing. So, you know, when Target gets really aggressive with its pricing or, you know, you've got different discount stores with a, you know, the price is driven down. So it's might be better for you guys. But Canada, for me, sometimes is a trap. You know, I see things, and then, you know, I tend to go for the items, and, you know, I buy it, and, you know, it just stays there, and it doesn't really sell. So it's a harder market because it's slower, and you have to be, like, so when I do sales rank in Canada, say for a toy has to be at 10,000 to compare with a 100,000 toy in the U.S.
That's interesting.
So, like, you really have to stay – typically, you would stay under – like, for me, I would stay under rank 10,000 to 12,000 if I want to sell it in, like, 2 to 4 weeks.
No kidding.
So, I mean, even when you're looking at a 2,000 rank toy, that's comparable to a 20,000 rank toy in the U.S. So, and then, I mean, because it's so slow moving, one sale can really drive a product down in rank. So you might think it's really good. But then you have to look at Camel to see, you know, is that just one sale that made it go down to 2,000. So it's a really tough market to gauge, you know, how fast things are going to sell.
Okay, I keep thinking about your mindset. You know, the way your mind works is probably perfect for that, and it's probably the reason you're having so much success. It's just impressive.
Yeah. So with Canada, it's a good extra kind of thing to have, right? So, I mean, whenever you're hitting a wall, right, with your sales and, you know, you can't get any more, then, you know, another marketplace may boost you up just a little bit more, right?
Right.
So if you're trying to break through a sales number, you know, I've had it in the case where I'm looking at a sales number. I'm like, I want to break through it. And then I'm like, wait, I actually did break through it because my U.S. sales were X. Plus, my Canadian sales actually put me to that level. You know, if you're trying to sell, say, like $10,000 a month, and you're at 9,500 US, well, I may have sold $1,000 on .ca, which puts me over my goal.
No, it makes sense. I get it. I saw somebody today who bought Zoomers for $20. I don't know if you saw that. And I'm thinking to myself, my gosh. And somebody said in Europe, those things are still selling for well over $100. You know. And then I think to myself, does it make sense for them to ship that over? And I guess that's kind of the same thing you're saying, is that, hey, once that market's diluted in the U.S. and you want to get to that next level, expand out where it makes sense. You know, the challenge is if you're limited on funds, that's not a good idea, right? So if you have, you know, you've hit that place where you have more money than time, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's one of the things. I've seen you've had trouble buying inventory sometimes, right? Spending, you can't spend it fast enough sometimes.
Yep.
Because there's just so much opportunity.
And I never imagined that that would happen. But, you know, all along I was thinking, you know, oh, you know, I'm spending fast enough. And then all of a sudden you get to this place where it's like, okay, now what do I do? You know, it's a very shift in your mindset.
It really is. But, you know, again, you're not using debt to do this. And
right.
I think that's another big issue. A lot of people are, they're borrowing money, and then all of a sudden the market falls out and they're in deep trouble. And so you're not in that position. And so you can be willing to wait a little bit longer, maybe take a different chance. I think that's one of the keys to this, is you have to look at this as a longer term than, you know, 2 months. Fast turns are great, and I agree with that model. However, you have to think that through and buy the right amount. That's the art, I think, to fast turns and things like that, and flipping and flipping and flipping and using credit cards and stuff like that. So, you know, the goal of this podcast is really to try to help people move forward. And I think you've given a lot of things to think about. Again, I think that, you know, I'm probably going to leave here with a bunch more questions after talking with you, because you're making me think just so many different things. And so, can you offer something to our listeners that they could put in place? So they're kind of stuck, maybe, you know, and maybe it is moving to Canada and think about expanding. Or is there something you can bring that people can put in place maybe tomorrow to say, hey, this might help you move forward?
Yeah, so I a big part of my success is relationships. So I would say, you know, buddy up with someone, or get in a mastermind group or something like that. I'll tell you a little story about something I did. So probably, I think it was a year ago, I had these razors that I was looking for, and they were really good. They were, you know, buy for 20 and they sell for 120 or something. And so I asked in my little Canadian Facebook group if anyone would be willing to help me in another, you know, area of the country. And this guy jumped in and said, oh, yeah, I'll help you. I'll go out and find them. And I think he was just kind of starting Amazon. And so he went out, you know, he said, I'll help you. And 2 hours later, he was in a store and say, is this the ones you want me to buy?
Wow.
And I was like, okay, this guy is really, you know, supercharged, right? So anyway, we did all that. He sent them to me and everything worked out. And, you know, I kind of gave him some tips and said, you know, here's where I buy things and, he, you know, check this out. And I kept sending him bolos. And so he sent me stuff and so now it's kind of worked to the level of like we're constantly sending each other information. So it's, you know, when I find something, I tell him about it. We try to make it so that it's items where we can't really impact each other that much. You know, if it's something that's really slow moving and it's really readily available, we probably won't share it. But if it's something where it moves fast enough that two people aren't going to really affect the price, then we'll share it. And so we share this information and, you know, he's able to come back to me and say, oh, Toys R Us is having such and such a sale now. And, you know, they're having a really good clearance and, you know, maybe I'm at another store and I tell him about the clearance that they have. So it's hugely helped. Right. So, you know, where I thought I was kind of helping this guy, you know, a little bit, get his business off the ground. You know, we've been talking and his business is like larger than mine now. Right.
He's like, wow,
his sales are like, you know, are beating mine on a monthly basis. Now he's a single guy and he can, you know, he can go from 8 o'clock in the morning till, you know, midnight and sleep in his vehicle and go the next day. And, you know, so he's got that hustle and that fire to, you know, keep pushing. Right. But, you know, where I thought I was helping him, he helped me a huge amount. He, you know, got me into categories that I never thought of, you know, that kind of propelled me forward. So, you know, the takeaway from that, I think, is, you know, give, you know, buddy up with somebody or find a group and give some information to other people. I don't think it hurts, you know, if they're, you know, in a different state or something, right? And you can share this information. You can help them out and they'll help you out. And, you know, you can kind of bolster your sales together by doing that. You know, like Todd Forrester and Harvey and Matt, you know, I think they're probably doing that, right? They're building off each other, right? And they're really kind of, you know, strong in this game, right? And they're probably sharpening each other's skills very well, right?
And he uses this phrase, iron sharpens iron. You know, I mean, it really does make sense. You know, you're going to, especially fresh perspective, somebody that enthusiastic and that, they're going to ask more questions, right? You've asked a lot of questions. They're going to come back and ask, oh, wait, can they make this a little bit better? So I just think that's great advice. So your advice is don't be afraid. You know, everybody's so afraid to give away their information. Everybody has this information. I see stuff getting put out in groups, and I'm in so many groups, I see the same information getting transferred in almost every single group. That's not the key. Most people aren't going to take action. When you work with somebody else, there's almost that accountability. Kristen Ostrander uses it. And she has an accountability partner, and I just think that that's such a great example. So that's really good advice. All right, Beaver, how can people get in touch with you? You have a bunch of groups. You have a Share a VA. You have a couple other groups that I'm in. So tell us, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
So I actually, today, I made a web page.
Oh.
It's very simple.
Okay.
It's Beaver, B-V-E-R, dot me, M-E. So B-V-E-R dot M-E.
That's it. There's no more to it. That's it.
That's
Beaver
it.
Dot me. Wow, you did make it simple. That's great.
Yeah.
I'm going to put the link in the podcast and in the show notes. I mean, I just really appreciate you taking the time. I think there's such a great perspective that you come from, and you're available for questions. People can fire them up. You like asking them, for sure. So I think people can get in touch with you. Brian, thank you so much for taking the time out tonight.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.